This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to be with you today, Matt and Patrick, today. Coming up a little bit later on this hour from Reuters News Service, Brad Heath is going to join us. If you have not read this article, and it is an amazing article and well-researched, I got to admit, I'm a big kind of a wonkish guy when you do a lot of research with your journalism. And they did a heck of a job showing that the Minneapolis police is response to multiple things. You know, their argument is, oh, we're down on staff, but their response times and it don't match up with the response on as far as the decline in staff. I mean, they're basically 25% down, but a lot of their services, they're 50, 60, 70, even 90% less follow through in the last year than they were before. So it's more than just staffing issues. And yeah, they clearly don't want to talk about that. I'll get to that a little bit later on. Patrick, how are you today, my friend?
Doing pretty well. Enjoying what might be one of the last really warm days of the year.
Yeah, it's nice out there. I'm a little. I gotta admit, we usually have Sven, by the way, join us here on Thursdays. He's actually going to join us tomorrow. I think that there's a chance of some showers and thunderstorms late. And I think he was talking about this in his last weather forecast that when you get this much heat kind of building up, and you can tell the humidity is out there too, that we're going to start getting some. I had some of those weird showers today where it was raining, and it was not just kind of like one or two drops, but raining, and there wasn't a cloud in the sky. Couldn't figure out where it was coming from. But tonight I think we're going to figure it. Yeah, let's look at it's coming from up there. So there's a decent chance of precipitation, about 80% tonight. And then a decent chance tomorrow morning as well. So just keep that in mind as you're heading on out. But it's a little windy. It's a perfect day if you're one of those guys that likes to get windsurfing in or sailing in before you have to pull. This might be the best chance you have, because I'll tell you what, how long do you think it will take a guy on Bademakoska? Well, almost went the wrong way. Bademakoska, how long do you think it will take a guy on Bademakoska to go across that lake on a windy day like this on a windsurfer? That's about 20 seconds. Enjoyable, isn't it? It's so relaxing to be on the water. Yeah, this is one of those days where you're going to have the guys leaning on their sailboats to try to keep them right side up.
How are you doing today? Did you do your Thursday shopping?
Did my Thursday shopping. As a matter of fact, I'm glad you brought that up. What I have noticed now, and once again, when we went through the pandemic, and I actually still go back and I look at some of the photos when I went into those grocery stores and they were empty. I mean, you couldn't find anything. When I go back and I look at those photos, I remember I said to myself, okay, we just have to have a new game plan. We're all in this together sort of thing. And this is one of the reasons why I've been a big advocate for when they do start handing out and doling out that money for the people on the frontline workers, that grocery store workers should get some of that coin. Because, reminder, they were kind of ordered out there. Conservatives are like, get to work! Oh, I mean, we like you, but get to work! There's nothing to be afraid of. I mean, and they were frontline workers, and they really were. And, you know, so you learn how to basically, you see what they're going through, you see the stocking there, you know, that a lot of processors and distributors are having issues, so you kind of learn to deal with things. What I have noticed now is that all of a sudden, one thing will be completely out. And and I don't know if it's just the store, or if it's the metro, or if it's national, but all of a sudden you can't find it. Cottage cheese. And hey, Lord, I love my cottage cheese. I'm a big fan. 1970s diet guy. but yeah, I haven't been able to find a lot of cottage cheese. I mean, there's some, you know, some of those off brands, but you know, it's a lot of it's gone. ground lamb. Can't find ground lamb to save yourself anymore. The good news, Patrick, I think you'll be happy to hear this. The spam section, completely stocked now.
Good to hear. Yeah, the one thing that I can't find is Tony Sachery's Creole seasoning, and that was gone before the hurricane.
Well, but okay, so you think there might be, well, that's interesting. I wonder if that was a hurricane-related, you know, issue, or just, because remember, they've had a few storms come through, so it might have just been in the recap of the recoup of the other storm. That's interesting. I never thought about it. The spice aisle definitely seems to be a lot less stocked than it was. I'm not sure why that is, but you know, it's interesting. You know what the truth is, and I want to make sure everyone out there hears it. Okay, fine. I'll find something else. I don't need that. I can work around it. All right. That's that, because you know we're still going through this, and we still have got to get this, do this together. And I'm going to be damned if I'm going to let the selfish bastards that have been pushing that, yeah, open everything, no masks, no vaccines. I'm going to be damned if I let them win the day. I'm going to tell you what. I think part of the reason why they bellyache so much is because they know when this is all over, they're going to be, hey, guys, can we kind of forget about what my stance was during that whole pandemic? Kind of like we were acting together. No, I am never going to forgive you for putting out a policy and endorsing a policy that led to people dying because you wanted to go watch a movie, you selfish, greedy jackasses. I got a lot to get to today. And like I said, I got a Minnesota coronavirus update. I'm going to start off with a story that I wanted to try to get to yesterday and didn't get to because it's kind of an update on one of the stories that we've been kind of following. The city of Sartell. Oh, Sartell. You know, it's not good. Sartell, you seem to be in the news quite a bit. You seem to be and it's never on a good sign. The city of Sartell now plans to remove Thin Blue Line flag insignia from city property after receiving requests from residents and the American Civil Liberties Union of Minnesota. The Sartell Police Chief, Jim Hughes, shared a message on Tuesday on the city's police department Facebook page that says, the city is removing the decals and designing a new decal to represent the reason we had the blue line flag on our squad to begin with, to remember the officers that have given their lives in the line of duty. If I may make a suggestion, if you've got officers who have died in the line of duty in Sartell, list their names. Yeah, you know, by all means, I don't think you need an insignia. Just, you know, officers who died and list their names. I mean, I think that's a much better tribute than a flag that's been, whether it was initially designed to be used kind of in, you know, kind of a white power authoritative way, or it became that way, remains to be seen. But it's, you know, if you want to honor the people who have, you know, served and died in the line of duty, I don't know why you wouldn't just list their names, by all means. The city's squad cars display Thin Blue Line flag decals on the cars, which have become controversial after a version of the flag was carried at the Unite the Right rally in 2017 in Charlottesville, Virginia, and at the January 6 attacks of the U.S. Capitol. You know, I think there was actually one or two of those flags that were used to beat police officers. So I don't quite know why you would want that anyway. But hey, I guess those police officers were asking for it, huh? No, they weren't. The city is also removing the flag from the city's public safety facility, which houses the police department. Sartell resident Hannah Kowalski, 22, first emailed city leaders about the flag in the spring. At the time, officials told Kowalski the decals represent the courage and sacrifice displayed by officers while they keep the community safe. Yeah, and also, you know, is usurped by white power people and anti-American jackasses who try to storm the Capitol. So you can sort of try to sit there and say, yeah, it's kind of like that woman who was down in Bloomington that was using the white supremacist guy to kind of coordinate an event. And I can't remember the details of that. Where she said, well, he's a good event planner. Yeah, but that's kind of burying the lead a little bit, isn't it? It's like, he might be fine at getting hors d'oeuvres warm at the perfect room temperature, but at the same time, yeah, he's got some baggage there that you can't just ignore. Same thing goes with the flag. I get it. You like the flag. But at the same time, if you either don't realize what it's come to mean and what it come to imply, or you agree with what it's come to mean and come to imply. You see, that's the problem with your position, is that it's hard for us to determine, do they know, hey, do you know that that's kind of been usurped by racists and people that are anti-American? And if you say no, then the question is, comes on down. You basically trying to validate it. No, it's like people saying the stars and bars. The Confederate flag was somehow, I'm flying the Confederate flag. And yeah, sure, some racist and Klan members like to fly the flag to torment and harass black. But I'm doing it because I'm just a big fan of the Dukes of Hazzard. Well, you can't really separate the two of them. About damn time we learned that. Kowalski, who uses they-them pronouns, argued the meaning had been co-opted by a fringe political movement and will actively alienate community members of color. Kowalski created an online petition asking for the decals to be removed. It garnered more than 600 signatures, so it's not exactly a fringe movement out there in Sartell, which should tell you something. Kowalski faced backlash and threats through social media, including a counter-petition calling Kowalski some moron who decided to start the position. The counter-petition, by the way, give you an idea. Once again, I want to make sure we understand this. This is Sartell right here. If you want to understand welcoming, understanding, community, here it is. She puts out a petition to try to basically get these decals lifted. Starts a different petition, a counter-petition, which says, quote, some moron who decided to start a petition, end quote. That counter petition has 2,145 signatures, over three times as many as the one wanting to get rid of the thin blue line. Hey, Sartell, this is you. You want to look at us and say, we're not as you make us out to be. But then, fine, you don't want to sign the petition to take down the thin blue line flags. You don't want to sign that one. But then you get three times as many people signing the one saying some moron who's decided to start the petition giggling while you do it. I'm sorry. You got more racism than you've got fiber in your cereal. I'll just say it like that, okay? Is that raisins? Oh, no. Ugh. That's racism. You're a little cesspool up there, and I know you're going, Matt, how could you call this? Of course. You all know what this flag has come to mean. And once again, let me call out the cops up there, if I can, sir. What the hell? If you want to honor officers who have died in the line of duty in Sartell, put their names on your car. Is this that? Are you that stupid? Me saying it, I mean, that's what I get paid for. Are you that stupid that you don't understand that that would be a far better way to honor the legacy of any officer who has fallen in the line of duty than a thin blue line flag? Because it seems like you're not that smart that you wouldn't understand putting the officer who's fallen's name there would be a fine tribute to those officers. So people would recognize their names to a point like when we put the names on highways. So you realize in a lot of cases, tragically, an officer has died in the line of duty and we are honoring them with that stretch of highway. In some cases, it's the stretch of highway where that officer did die. It was that officer that's on 35W. North, there's a stretch there. I can't remember the name of the officer.
Sean Silvera.
Thank you very much. That's Silvera. That basically you have a stretch of road up there that's where he died, unfortunately. I think it was like they're trying to get a speeding car over, the tires popped, and it hit him, and tragic case. But you by putting their name out there, you honor the fallen. You guys up there, you like I say, you don't like, don't you dare label us like that. And then you go and do crap like this. How are we not supposed to label Sartell a bunch of backward hicks? I mean, seriously, how are we supposed to not look at you and say, well, racistville? I mean, seriously, how am I not supposed to do that when the petition that basically calls the woman who said some moron who started the petition? So fine, I don't have any problem calling you out. I wouldn't live in Sartell. Sounds like a pit to me. Sounds like an absolute pit. I won't live up there. But, you know, they've got a certain type, don't they? Other cities and agencies have dealt with the controversy over the thin blue line flag in recent months. In January, the University of Wisconsin-Madison's police chief banned officers from using the flag's imagery while on duty. In May, Bloomington Mayor Tim Busey apologized for flying the flag in recognition of National Police Week after members of an anti-racist coalition and other organizations complained. I will once again make a point here that this woman, this individual complained about the flag, and it doesn't seem to me that the police department took it seriously until the ACLU got involved. And then the second the ACLU got involved, all of a sudden, oh yeah, I guess we'll take them down. Well, my guess would be is that someone's going to probably lash out here in an ugly way because it is Sartell. I just hope that it doesn't end in tragedy, because I got to tell you right now, officers in Sartell, if anything happened to Kowalski in this, it's going to look pretty bad for you and everyone else up there. 952-9466. Hey, it's your city. It's your crew. You need to police that stuff up, maybe without a thin blue flag on your car, okay? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Other developments in some crimes we got to get to, and then obviously we're going to get to this incredible story about the Minneapolis police and the response times from Reuters in just a little bit. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. The progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Chris is in Minneapolis. Really quick, let's get him in before we get into these other news stories. Welcome on in, Chris.
Hey, thanks for having me. Hey, I just want to say real quick, I don't remember any of these thin blue line flags anywhere, like, before the Black Lives Matter movement. It's all been a response to that and the Blue Lives Matter. Well, you're just copying Black Lives Matter. Well, I don't know. It's like the Confederate statues. It's like it's saying we're in charge. Here's who really matters, and quit your whining. Stop complaining about us.
Chris, so
that's all I
got to
say.
No problem. I appreciate it, and I think he's exactly right. I mean, for me, at least, the thin blue line flags started showing up after Black Lives Matter flags, and the way I interpreted them, and the way I think they were meant to be interpreted, is no, they don't. Black Lives Matters were saying Black Lives Matter, and that was saying no, they don't. Police are always right. Not necessarily. And because, like, you guys keep talking about there's only one or two bad apples. Dude, man, half your freaking barrel is bad, okay? In some of these precincts, and they're just, ugh. And you guys, and your reluctance to even call out the bad behavior or try to clean it up, that's on you. But that being said, it's been usurped by white supremacists and anti-American zealots. Why are you still having it? I mean, you should have been out there with razor blades taking them off your damn cars on your own. And the fact that you weren't tells me you probably either agree with the anti-American zealots or the white supremacists. Which one is it? You tell me, Chief. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Yeah, I'm a jackass. I know it. Some updates on some crimes that have happened. One person has been charged in the shooting death of the 12-year-old Landon Bean in North Minneapolis apartment complex earlier this month. Jeremiah Marquise Grady, 18, of Minneapolis, was charged with second-degree murder in the killing of Bean outside of Grady's apartment building at North 8th and Aldrich Avenues in the Heritage Park complex. He was charged by warrant and, as of Thursday morning, had not been taken into custody. Bean was killed after getting into a fight with another boy believed to be Grady's younger brother. As the fight continued, witnesses told police the other boy's brother, who police identified as Grady, came around the north side of the building with a gun and fired several rounds at Bean. According to the criminal complaint, witnesses told police that during the fight, a masked man wearing all black came around the building and pointed the gun at everyone, yelling, "Yeah, what's up?" And people began to run. The suspect allegedly fired off several rounds, two of which struck Bean. So, and once again, he has not been taken into custody at this point. But, yeah, I'm going to presume it's going to be fairly soon. Hopefully so. This goes back to the story out of Dunn County in Wisconsin, which is where this happened, where the four people were killed in the SUV. It's about 50 miles northeast of the Minnesota border crossing into Wisconsin. So it is out kind of in the middle of nowhere. They did call in the FBI, and I'm going to guess because the FBI is now involved, things are starting to move. A 56-year-old man in St. Paul was arrested, and a second man is being sought in connection with the quadruple murder following discovered on Sunday in western Wisconsin cornfield. The Dunn County Sheriff's Office announced on Thursday. Darren Lee McWright Osborne was arrested by the St. Paul Police Department after Dunn County issued warrants. The second man, Antony Darnique Suggs, 38, is believed to be in the Twin Cities, according to the sheriff. Any information as to the whereabouts of Anton Suggs can be called into the agency, or that information can be also provided to the Dunn County Sheriff's Office so we can forward it on to the appropriate law enforcement jurisdiction. Sheriff Kevin BYGD wrote wrote on the Facebook post, Suggs should be considered armed and dangerous and should not be approached, the sheriff said. I'm going to presume that there was already reports of a second SUV that was on the scene, or at least was in the area. And my guess is with the aid of the FBI, they were able to access any cameras, any information, and kind of track the, because the fact that they've, I didn't think this was going to be solved this quickly. At least arrest made. I shouldn't say that it shouldn't be solved. I said arrest made and a specific culprit being sought after at this point with the name and the identification. I didn't think that was going to be the case, but they must have had some information which was fairly easy to track the individuals who were involved here. It really just a sad case. I'm not quite sure what exactly happened and why these four people had driven all the way out to Dunn County in Wisconsin for this. But, you know, this is some ugly stuff. And so, you know, if you do know where Suggs is, call the cops, you know, get them, you know, call the Dunn County Sheriff's Office, give them the information, you know, I think it's kind of a something that doesn't need to be said per se, that this obviously is a person who does not really care that much about human life. That's the thing which is hard about this case and some of these other cases of the individual who is they discovered pieces of across Minneapolis, the one that was up in Wisconsin or up on Lake Superior. You know, it's like where did we lose all this? The idea of humanity, you know, where did we become so broken and dystopian that this is what we consider, you know, vengeance or justice or whatever in the twisted mind of these individuals is going on? It does make you really weep. And as far as where we're headed for society, but when you basically have, you know, people constantly screaming in other people's faces, primarily from the right, let's just be honest about it, it's only a matter of time before, you know, people have had enough. I mean, there's a story out of the University of Alabama today where the woman is walking across campus and some, you know, I don't want to call him religious because I can't tell you there's no religion that this guy is, you know, he's preaching. He's just on the campus talking about how women need to get in the kitchen. And she clubbed him. Now, I don't condone violence. The dude was asking to get hit, though. Let's just be honest about it. He was asking to get punched. Unfortunately, she obliged him. But at the same time, that's where we're at, kind of out of the society. And I just... You know, these people are like, it's almost as if that's what it is they're just trying to, you know, we're trying to say, you know, let's have civility. And they're saying, no. And I think this is where we're getting it. This is the eventual end run. Scary as hell. It is. Scary as hell. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. When we do come on back, Brad Heath is going to join us, journalist with Reuters, an exceptional piece on the response time and the response procedures for Minneapolis police. And guess what? their declines don't match up with the personnel declines. We'll get into that here in just a little bit. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I like Matt's comment here on the. You can watch the show if you so desire. It's radio for your eyes. We are streaming on Facebook on AM 950 Radio and Progressive Citizen X, Matt McNeil Show. The thin blue line flag is racist as hell. Not going to disagree with that. It's and also Lisa chiming in. It is unbelievable how life has been devalued. I can't disagree with that. I absolutely cannot disagree with that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Todd Colid is, of course, a great listener to the station. A friend. I call him a friend. The lucky duck, moved over to Spain a few years ago. And, yeah, dear Lord, the food in Spain, the wines. Mwah! I'm jealous as the day is long. I am jealous as the day is long. He, of course, though, loves the station, would love to sponsor the station, love to visit our sponsors. Can't do it, not exactly an easy commute from Spain. So what he does is he sponsors this radio station. And we do that for, he does that for a week. And we're very grateful. Thank you very much, Todd. We do appreciate that. More on that in a second. But if you would like to sponsor the radio station, you're more than welcome to do so. 952-946-8885. 952-946-8885 is the phone number. Give us a call. Let us know what you want us to mention, and we'll do that. We kind of do that. Todd, he's got his latest band, Just Folk, is out. Their latest single is It Monday? It's only getting a lot of plays out there. Make sure you head on out there and enjoy that. And once again, thank you very much to Todd. 952-946-8885 if you'd like more information on that. By the way, I will say this, Patrick, I have actually started sorting through the photos. We're planning on doing another calendar again. Like I said, the wildest thing about 2020, published photographer was never on my horizon as far as things that I'd be accomplishing that year. I did eat a lot of boxes of ding-dongs. Oh, Hostess, oh, you saved me sometimes. They're delicious. But no, published photographer. We're going to do it again. I think I actually got some pretty good photos. We'll have to see if we can make the cut there. But we'll have more ways you can help out the station coming up later on this year. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. There is an extraordinary story done by Reuters here. And it's my kind of story because it brings the data. It brings the research that came along with it, and I'm a big fan of that. It basically looks at the question of what is going on in Minneapolis as far as policing, and asks the legitimate question, as we have had multiple people throughout the city ask the question of why are the police not nearly as present as much? Why are the police not nearly as visible? Why does it take forever for the police to respond to a call? Well, the argument that the police have said since George Floyd is, oh, we're down on staff. But the reality is Reuters did some looking behind the numbers here, and that doesn't quite match up to what they found when they did the research. Brad Heath is kind enough to join us. He's a journalist with Reuters. He is behind this piece. It's an exceptional piece, and he's taken some time today to talk about it with us. Brad, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time today.
I'm happy to do it.
All right. So at Reuters, what prompted you to say, okay, maybe we should look into these numbers? Had you been hearing about the people saying that the response times were bad in Minneapolis?
I'd heard a little of that, and I'd done similar work before in Baltimore a couple of years ago. They were the same. Part of me was just curious to see whether there would be a repeat of this or whether things would be going differently this time. And just to start to look at the data. And we looked at Minneapolis. We looked at a couple other cities, too, but the Minneapolis pattern was just particularly striking.
You started looking really right after George Floyd was killed by Derek Chauvin. It was June 1st of last year, and you did that 1 year stretch, correct?
Yeah. So we looked at the dispatch records from the police department going back to about 2015, but right in the June 1st, 2nd, 3rd time period, there's this dramatic change in how police in Minneapolis were approaching their jobs, maybe even slightly before June 2020. And the two clearest comparisons where, you know, to take the year June 2019 to 2020 and June 2020 to 21 and just look at policing levels and police activities changed over those two periods. And it really was, it was a dramatic pullback.
We should mention here that indeed the staffing issues at the Minneapolis Police Department are legitimate. They are down, what was your research showed, about 25% down where their staffing levels should be, correct?
Yeah, the best numbers we were able to get, and we asked the police for updated stuff that they didn't respond to, they're down about 200 officers, and that has definitely taken a toll. I mean, you know, they're running on calls a lot. They've had to take, the mayor told us they'd taken officers out of investigative units to put them on patrol so that they could sufficiently answer 911 calls. So that is definitely a thing.
So so a 25% decrease in police staffing, but your research into this showed that it didn't match up as far as declining policing what the percentage change was for certain different procedural elements of police work.
Oh, absolutely. So the decrease in officers, if that was down by a quarter, you know, there are certain activities like traffic stops that basically were halted. You know, I think traffic stops were down about 85%, stops of people and vehicles the police considered suspicious, even things like directed patrols, which is just when they go and say, you know, there's a problem in this area or we want to keep an eye on things. We're just going to go spend some time here, largely came to an end in the year after George Floyd's murder.
It, what is interesting as you say that is, well, and I want to ask you a legitimate question in regards to the, is it fair to these numbers? Because the numbers you list in the Reuters story are very striking and incredibly striking. But I mean, is it a fair, to a point, is it a fair comparison under the guise of this? Is that, okay, it's a 25% decrease in staffing of the police, but because of that, it does affect their work performance at a very different level of percentages. Is that a fair thing to say, or is that just a red herring to a point?
No, I think that's a fair thing to say. I mean, it's difficult to really tease that out, right? Because on any given shift, we can't really determine how many officers are sitting in patrol cars able to respond to things. You know, if you lose staffing, you're going to start dropping your lowest priority activities first, which is something a lot of residents have definitely experienced, you know, when they want to report a larceny or something, right? And you're not going to get a car to come to that now. You're going to fill out a report because they're doing other stuff. So low priority stuff you would expect to fall more. And one of the ways that I went about trying to just kick the tires and see what's going on is to try to talk to police officers in the city and say, okay, what is behind this? Because this does happen sometimes in cities, and there's a temptation to think it's an organized labor activity or it's the bosses saying, you know, ease up on this stuff, guys. And uniformly, and what I heard was not so much short staffing, though that is a thing, as we don't want to run the risks that come from these kinds of encounters. You know, if a traffic stop has this outside chance of going sideways, and there's not really any upside, why do it?
And once again, Brad Heath is joining us from Reuters, an exceptional piece that I highly recommend, Hands Off Patrol, talking about the decreased response by Minneapolis police to certain jobs. You did actually, one of the points I really do enjoy, and I think, by the way, whenever I get something that's got a lot of research on it, I can't tell you how much I appreciate at the very end you do a little bit of methodology at the very end of your article. I highly recommend people read that as well. But you did.
I'm glad somebody noticed that.
I did. Well, I'm wonkish on good research, that's for sure. But I want to make a point out. One of the things that was interesting on a national level is it did seem like there was a bit of a national pullback after George Floyd. But in a lot of these other police departments, it did get back to normal levels after a few weeks, correct?
Yes. And we didn't look everywhere. I mean, yeah. I looked at six other large jurisdictions, and most of them experienced some level of pullback in, you know, police-initiated encounters in the weeks after George Floyd's death. You know, could that be unrest? Could that be staffing? I didn't get the kind of fulsome explanation I did in Minneapolis, but there was really no place I looked at where the pullback was as pronounced, and certainly no place where it was as sustained. You know, the numbers in terms of proactive policing in Minneapolis are still nowhere near where they were before George Floyd's death.
Your analysis here also brings up a very interesting counterpoint, because one of the things that a lot of people in Minneapolis have said is that the idea of stopping suspicious people or suspicious vehicles, is it really someone suspicious or is it racial profiling? In both those cases, both of those are down, and I think most people would say that's probably a good thing. But when you look at, you know, one of the things, community engagement meetings between the police officers and just getting out in the community and talking with them, the interaction by police down 91%. You know, walking is down 69%. Checking in on businesses down 71%. I mean, the reality is it's not picking and choosing. It's across the board. It seems like all of the, for the most part, the elements of what police engage in as far as actually the job they've been hired for is down dramatically from where it was a year ago.
Yeah, and that's an interesting dynamic, too, because if you talk to some of the people in the police reform community, you know, one of the things that has, that there's a demonstrated impact on just police perceptions of the community, if you're an officer and you're only showing up on 911 calls, you're going to have a different perception of the people you're dealing with than you are if you're walking a foot patrol or if you're showing up when people aren't in a crisis. And so a lot of the, you know, foot patrols and just being on top of problems proactively are the things some people in the reform community were looking at in terms of good practices. There definitely are some people who are content or happy to see fewer traffic stops. And that's a fraught debate for a lot of reasons. But still, the idea that this happened unilaterally rather than as a thought-out reform initiative is interesting. I mean, there are a few places I've been lately that are spending more time and more civic energy thinking about what law enforcement should look like than Minneapolis. But the reality is, in the interim, while the city talks about that, the police have just gone and made a bunch of big changes.
And it should be interesting. One of the things you talked to a retired police commander, and the point that he makes there's not a lot of huge appetite for officers to be aggressive in their job. Nobody on the job or working in the job can blame those officers for being less aggressive, and it seems to be the stance. Although there comes this line, which I was really kind of bothered by as a person who lives in the Twin Cities. The supervisor was like, "I don't blame you at all if you don't want to go do anything. Hang out at the station." That's what they're saying. And I just sort of say, okay, wait a minute here. You know, it's kind of one of those things where as we deal with this evolving crisis in Minneapolis, I can tell you one thing. I don't think a lot of people like the idea of police officers just hanging out at the station as opposed to doing the job they've been hired to do, which is clearly, I think, where this is, you know, once again, crossing that line, is that you're hired to be a police officer and you need to be a police officer. You just can't hang out at the precinct and act like you're doing your job.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's going to be interesting for Minneapolis to decide, and I will be very interested to see how this referendum comes out, is like, what do you want the job of a police officer to be? And I think that's sort of a question that's on the table. And how expansive do you want the job of a police officer to be? How much discretion do you want an officer on the street to have? You know, that I'm going to stop this car for rolling a stop sign, that car. Because maybe I think I'm going to find a bigger problem if I stop this car. Mm-hmm. That'll be really interesting. And I don't see, there's definitely not a civic consensus on it.
No.
I was struck by how polarized people are on exactly what they want from the police.
Absolutely. And we're having that big fight right now, and they're trying to determine whether or not the reform the police ballot initiative is even going to be on the ballot this November with the mayor's election, the city council election. It'll be interesting to see there. You actually have one of the best quotes, one of my favorite quotes, actually, in talking about the counterpoint to what the Minneapolis police are saying, being less aggressive. The reality is proactive policing works, and this is the quote from Justin Nix, a University of Nebraska Omaha criminologist. The evidence that proactive policing works is pretty solid. It is. It just, you know, you don't want to racially profile, but you still got to do the job. And that's, I think, the way I take Justin's comment is that, you know, these are proven police techniques, and you just pulling back on them because you're afraid of how it's going to be perceived is probably not the best policy if you're going to be a police officer.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really complicated question of where, what kind of proactive policing works and where. You know, if you have neighborhoods where there's a lot of shooting, you probably want the police trying to get guns off the street.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things that was striking to me just spending a couple days in Minneapolis was how many people are carrying now, legally, illegally, and people carrying illegally just with no sense of fear about it. You know, and what Professor Nix and others have talked about is this connection between, if you know the police aren't going to stop anybody, then it takes away one disincentive to carry illegally because you're just not going to get in trouble for it.
The outcome of this less policing in Minneapolis is also apparent in your article. You talk to not only people who make the comment that it's a gangster's paradise right now because no one is policing anything, but others who feel so helpless that they seem themselves to be trying to take to the streets to try to be some sort of authority as far as, you know, in areas where there just is not any policing going on at this moment.
Yeah, I don't know how much authority that is or how much it's just if we hang around here, people are less likely to shoot at each other, mm-hmm. right? And that is, in some places, that had been one of the things police would do. I mean, that's what a directed patrol is. You just go out and hang around because nobody's going to shoot at each other when you're doing that. You know, that was a really interesting level of engagement in the community. And it was interesting in those neighborhoods to hear people who, you know, had been previously critical of the police, now critical of the police in different ways because they just were feeling abandoned.
This article is absolutely outstanding. And once again, because I love research, I like numbers, and it brings the numbers and the research. It lets people come up with their own, you know, kind of, you know, theories and conclusions on this. But it's just an absolutely top-notch article from Reuters. Congratulations on the article. It's rarely you see something this well written, Brad, and I really appreciate the time. This has been an absolute pleasure. I'll make sure I post this article out for everyone to read a little bit later on, okay?
Oh, that'd be great. Thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Brad Heath, kind enough to join us, and I appreciate him joining us on his day off. He is very nice to do that. Hands-off patrol. Reuters investigates an excellent article. An excellent article. I'll get that posted out a little bit later on. I'll come back, talk about that a little bit more here in just a moment. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Okay, let me make sure I go back to this article here. There are some things in this article which are really hard to kind of comprehend. That, I mean, really, once again, it just does not match up. That the police and the mayor and other people are saying, oh, it's a police staffing issue. No, they're just not doing their damn job. The Minneapolis police are just not doing their damn job. And the one person was saying in the article that you know, fewer people would get stopped. I don't blame you at all if you don't want to do anything. Just hang out at the station. Is that what we're really paying you guys to be police officers to do? Is just hang out at the station? What, you got some TV there you're watching? Playing a little ping pong? Because that's not what you're hired for. And when you look at the starkness of the numbers and the decreases, and once again, I think we can make the argument on some things like, you know, pulling over a suspicious car, you know, basically stopping a suspicious person. Yeah, I mean, you know, it becomes very difficult to disseminate which one of those is a suspicious person or is it racial profiling. You got to be careful there. So I think we all can agree on some things being decreased is not the worst thing. But when you look across the board, and once again, Reuters brought the information. They went and got the data. They went and looked at the numbers, and then they broke it down, and it was an exceptional piece on this because it just shows you your 25% staffing issue doesn't match up with your lackluster policing. And at the end of the day, as people scream, you gotta respect the police have got to do their damn job. And them hiding out in the precincts is not what they're getting paid for. And once again, I'll go back to, If this is not the job you want, no one is forcing you to keep this job. You can leave at any point and go start doing something else. Bon voyage. Good luck. But the idea that police officers are just, they have just basically chosen to not police officer and still get the check and still get the bennies. Come on. At the end of the day, you once again, I've got to go back to the people. I know the people out there that are pushing this ballot initiative are pie in the skying it. They're not understanding the complexities of these issues. I get that, and I think that there are some problems there. But for the people that are against this, this is what you're basically backing up. Some guys that I'm just going to hang out at the precinct house today. I don't want to do my job. Someone got shot. Sucks to be them. Paraphrasing. But I mean, is it really that way off base? This is, and once again, excellent journalism, but sometimes, and usually in the case when you get excellent journalism, you get a really bad upset stomach. And that's what we got here. The Minneapolis police are failing to do their job, and it's not the staffing issues. It's just they've chosen not to do their damn job. And if you think we should be rewarding that kind of behavior, especially when we're paying out left and right on health care benefits and lawsuits because of crimes they committed while they're officers, well, that's not a good investment at all. Hour number two is up next. God, I'm still just this story from Reuters on the decline of the Minneapolis police doing their damn job. Fewer stops led to fewer people being searched for guns and drugs. A few months before Floyd was killed, police made 90 drug arrests. Police records show a year later, they made 28. The number of people charged with breaking gun laws dropped by more than half, even as shootings multiplied. They're just not doing their job. And, you know, it's almost like an abusive, you know, relationship. It's like, you had better like how I treat you or else I'm going to treat you worse. And maybe that's the best way to say it is that the Minneapolis police are an abusive spouse with the city of Minneapolis. Maybe that's a good way to say it. It doesn't seem to be too far off base. So I'm going to be blunt. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Patrick, I should mention our friend Mike Lindell is back in the news. You know that he's having a big fight with Fox News, correct?
I think I have heard that.
Yes. Yeah, he was upset with them because they don't want to put out his crazy lunacy carte blanche without kind of some safety, you know, rails, you know, like a bowling alley with a kid, you know, sort of thing. You know, no gutter balls here, buddy. He apparently is angry. He angrily pulled all of his ads off Fox News earlier this year after the cable news network refused to air the ads that claimed prove voter fraud in 2020 presidential election. By the way, funny story. No, he has not done that yet. However, the Daily Beast reports that Lindell has been trying to reach a deal to get MyPillow ads back up on Fox, but the network so far has refused to budge. In fact, the publication writes that Fox News has rejected Lindell's ads multiple times, including as recently as this past Monday and Wednesday. Lindell has been trying to get Fox to air ads about his Frank Speech social media platform, but the network has been rejecting them because the ads also promote Lindell's Cyber Symposium election conspiracy conference. Lindell said that he agreed to cut out any of the reference to the election conspiracies from the ads, but still Fox will not air them. They denied that one anyway, he complained, according to the Daily Beast. We got a message from them on Monday, September 13th. They did not like the content of frankspeech.com. They went from not liking the content of the ad to not liking the website. Lindell, however, seems determined to get back on Fox News and vowed to keep creating ads. You might have burned your bridge with your boyfriend there, Mike. You know, I'm just going to say that. I mean, you know, if you're going to call, and I get it, it's really easy to sit there and talk to the far, far extreme right fringe that looks at Fox News as liberal media. And so you get into that OAN Newsmax crowd who are just freaking loon balls. They are. They're just absolute loon balls. And you get into that crowd And so you start talking bad-mouthing Fox. Well, the reality is Fox News is still the number one news outlet or the number one opinion outlet, let's be fair about it, for the Republicans and the right wing. And so you can go on OAN and Newsmax to the, you know, 40,000 people who might be watching at any given point. You know, that's a, you know, a good web stream audience is what you're getting there. But the reality is if you want pound for pound to resonate within the Republican community, you still need Fox News. But he was, it's just a remarkable decision that we all kind of predicted, yeah, that's going to bite you in the caboose. But, you know, heaven forbid Mike actually calm down enough and get into just a reasonable state. How about that? And Mike, once again, dude, you're going to get, you're just, I don't want to see you lose everything. I don't. I mean, you got a lot of people, a lot of Minnesotans who are employed over at the Pillow Factory. I don't want to see them put out of work because you're shut down because of the lawsuits against you. So, if I may, just bluntly, just if you don't have the evidence. And once again, this was your own conference. You brought the evidence to your own conference. And you basically, even your own experts kind of looked at it and said, okay, this is a joke. This is a joke. If you don't have anything, just get out there, apologize profusely. Maybe they'll let you go. Instead of quadrupling down, insisting next week we'll find Sasquatch. John is in Minneapolis. He wanted to chime on Minneapolis Police Department issues. Welcome on in, John.
Thanks, Matt. I've been a resident of uptown Minneapolis for many years, over 30 years. I've been in the same house for 26 years. The Minneapolis Police Federation operates like a cult, the cult of bullies. And you're exactly right. Reuters proves it, that they are just not, they're refusing to do their job, and that is their way of getting what they want. So all these people who are now afraid of, going out or whatever because the cops aren't doing their job are now saying that there's any changes and we're going to go back, to the way things were, which is for Minneapolis, which could be the star of the North, is going to be a very, negative thing because we're going to be known as we already are, the most racist, segregated city of the North.
Well, the police are definitely pushing that. So
yeah, and people have to realize maybe this new, voting for this new system, it's not perfect, but it's not set in stone. There's all kinds of additional changes that the city council and the mayor have the ability to make. So it's just a step in the right direction.
And John, if I can step on in there, and thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. I don't want to necessarily get into the issue here, but I want to get back to the point is that, and John kind of alluded to this, there is an element within that police department that basically wants everything to go back before George Floyd and say, you need to apologize to Derek Chauvin and those other four officers. George Floyd got what he deserved. Give them the medals that they deserve for doing that, and we'll just go back to the way things were. That definitely seems to be a mentality I have seen from some of the behavior in this police department. I mean, my God, the Stallings case, that was 4 days after George Floyd, and look at all the crap they did there. There was no intention of changing. And not only that, but they went through with that for a year plus. No, the Minneapolis Police Department, it does definitely seem like that, their mentality is, thank you, sir, may I have another? That's what they want the city of Minneapolis to be. Thank you, sir, may I have another? I mean, I can't tell you how many times over the years I've had friends downtown watching a sporting event, go to a bar, going to a concert at one of the venues downtown, and, they get basically beat over the head by somebody, runs off with their cell phone, cop standing right there, and the guy says, sucks to be you. And you're like, geez, that's your police? That's your idea of what police work is? You know, why are you, by the way, why are you parked outside of the venue if it's not to try to limit this? And this was before all this pullback. No, the Minneapolis Police Department is just not doing the damn job because they're having a little pity party for themselves. And I don't have any problem saying that. I mean, it's the Reuters report. You tell me, I tell you what, you come out and contradict the facts and numbers that Reuters put out and tell me they're wrong. Until that time, you guys seem to have just a little pity party for yourself. You're feeling sorry for yourselves because people in Minneapolis are not going to go back to, thank you, sir, may I have another. And that's just the reality of it. 952-946-6205. Minnesota coronavirus update, and a lot to get to here today. Thursday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 2,484 new cases, 14 newly reported deaths, all of them occurring in September. That means they're all part of this surge, including a person's age 25 to 29 in Dakota County. The state's death toll now is 7,970 since the start of the pandemic. As of September 13th, the state reported that 3,362,569 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,179,113 people have completed their vaccine series. 57.1% of Minnesota's total population, including children under the age of 12 who are not eligible for the vaccine, have completed the vaccine series, and it jumps to 67.6 when it's excluding kids under the age of 12. So that goes up to 16 when you go up to 18. It is completed, it is 70%, and when it's just one dose, it's up to 75%. Through September 15th, the number of people with the COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 719. That's up from 718 on Wednesday. Of those people hospitalized, 209 people are in intensive care. 510 were in general hospital care. Even with the drop of 30 non-ICU cases from Tuesday's report, is still on par with the peak of the spring surge that maxed out at 202 patients in intensive care and 517 people in general hospital care. The 2,484 positive test results in Thursday's update were from 37,598 completed tests, creating a positivity rate of 6.60%. The test positivity rate for the past 7 days, according to Johns Hopkins in Minnesota, is 7.29. More than 400 coronavirus infections were reported for the week ending September 4th among pre-K-12 students and workers who were likely infectious while inside school buildings, the Minnesota Department of Health reported on Thursday. So once again, I want to make sure we understand the week we're talking about here. We're not talking about this week. We're not talking about last week. We're talking about the week before Labor Day. So, and this is the final numbers here, because I got news for you. You're about to get smacked in the head with a number here, some numbers here that are going to just blow your mind and how bad this is getting. More than 400 coronavirus infections were reported in the week ending September 4th. Of the weekly total of 410, more than doubles the count of 152 from the previous week. While the increase was not surprising, given that it coincided with the return of classes to most K-12 students, state health officials said they're concerned about the potential for school buildings and unvaccinated students to heighten the spread of coronavirus that causes COVID-19. Coronavirus transmission rates are already higher than at the start of the school year compared to last year, though there is a risk for viral spread to occur in schools and then exacerbate problems in surrounding communities. State Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm said transmissions from those cases to families and community settings, we would expect that we start seeing emerging pretty soon in the next couple of weeks. Another 276 school-related cases were also reported in the week ending September 11th, but that is a preliminary total and will increase when the state releases updated pre-K-12 figures next week. And I should mention, that was a four-day week because we had Labor Day that week. And I can tell you that number 276 is way low. We'll get to that in a second. Dr. Ruth Linfield, state epidemiologist, said reports of infections in pre-K-12 schools and youth programs really shot up this week. These cases involve people who could have been infected in schools or other locations but were in the school building during their infectious periods. Governor Walz on Thursday unveiled an on-site $100 incentive program for vaccine recipients at select clinics and health centers in communities hit hardest by the pandemic. The incentives will total about $100 in value but could range from Visa and Target gift cards to grocery store vouchers. Every shot in the arm is a critical step in stopping the spread of the virus, Walz said in a statement announcing the program. And local organizations around Minnesota know how to best encourage the communities where they get they serve to get their vaccine. The new option follows a $100 incentive program last month that enticed 80,000 new vaccine recipients. More than 3,000 visitors to the vaccine site at the Minnesota State Fair also received $100 gift cards. The state has identified 153 people whose coronavirus infections likely occurred at the state fair. 153. While that is a fraction of more than 1.3 million visitors, Malcolm said the confirmed infections are likely an undercount of the amount of viral spread at the 12-day event. I want to do – if I can do something here, I want to just do a little Matt's Math corner here. Oh, okay. So that's 0.01% of the people there, but they're saying that's grossly undercounted. I would say it is as well. There are going to be people who are just not. They're going to be sick as a dog, and they're not going to. They're not going to want to say anything on that. I do want to make sure we mention this. This is disturbing. I'm going to add on to this story. Just 10 days into the school year, an elementary school in Chisholm, who had Chisholm on their bingo card, Chisholm. Just 10 days into the school year, an elementary school in Chisholm is sending K-3 students home for distance learning due to a substantial COVID-19 outbreak. There's our first major one. Vaughn Stefsrud Elementary School started school on September 7th. Beginning today, September 16th, K-3 students will be distance learning for at least 2 weeks until October 4th due to an increasing number of cases, according to the Chisholm School District Superintendent Adrian Norman. During this 14-day period, families should self-quarantine from activities in group gatherings and help minimize further transmission to families, according to WDIO. It's unclear how many cases and exposures there have been. Bringing the News requested that information from the district. Chisholm schools do not have a mask mandate for students and staff, though it did discuss a release on August 10th saying, "We strongly recommend the use of masks." Well, how's that going for you guys? How's a strongly, you got the tough language out there. The school board unanimously approved a mask optional protocol. Oh, God, you idiots. On August 10th, while planning multiple mitigation strategies to help preserve our in-person learning. How's that personal responsibility crap working out for you guys? Because it seems like you'd be the authorities would, you know, especially in a school where you deal with educating people in science and stuff, would be to wear the mask. But you go without it, and already, you know, 10 days into the school year, you got your pre-K kids going through. And once again, it should be noted that infection rate had to start pretty much immediately as these kids got back into school. For them to get to the point where they're frantically shutting down and going to remote learning, that had to happen the second those kids walked in the door, that some kid who was sick was sent there by a parent who was saying, "Don't you ever wear a mask. If you wear a mask, the liberals win, so never wear a mask." And so a sick kid goes in there. How many teachers? How many kids? Ugh. Anyway, they approved the mask optional protocol August 10th while planning multiple mitigation strategies to help preserve our in-person learning. That includes sanitizing high area touch areas, providing hand sanitizer, frequent hand washing, and at least 5 feet of social distancing. News to the Chisholm School Board. Your plan sucks. Sucks. State epidemiologist Dr. Ruth Linfield said Wednesday the Minnesota Department of Health has seen school-related COVID-19 cases explode this week. We're already seeing big increases. Last week was about 150 cases per day, but that has shot up this week. Now, okay, so I want to make sure we go back. Let's go back to those earlier numbers where we were talking about the amount of kids that were getting sick per day. Now, once again, it was 400 was the first week of school, which was the week leading up to Labor Day weekend. The four-day week of Labor Day week, by the health department's own numbers, their numbers show that it was 150 cases per day, which would be 600 cases in a four-day span. And now, this week, 600 cases reported on Monday, 500 cases reported on Tuesday. You're already up to 1,100 cases after 2 days. This is a freaking nightmare. And dear Lord, who could have predicted it? Oh, that's right, we did. And I'm not even a freaking epidemiologist or a scientist or anything like that. We predicted it because we knew when you put the stupids in charge, dumb things happen. Ta-da! We'll take a break. Come on back. 952. I'm going to be livid for a little bit here. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. I want to stop and step back here because what if we, I'm a trained chimp, okay? Minky. Yes, I'm a trained chimp, okay? I don't necessarily consider myself to be incredibly smart on a lot of issues and stuff like this, but I trust scientists and I read. And I read news from legitimate news sources and stuff. And we started in around the 4th of July, we started making the thing. It's like, it's going to be a mess when school starts back up again. You're going to have mask mandates in the schools. And once again, we talked about this and I've talked about this numerous times. The counterpoint to rational arguments that are based in fact and reality was the howler monkey exhibits that showed up at these school board meetings going, never a mask, and then like this, and threatening, we know where you live, we're going to come kill you. And that was kind of the mentality, that they were threatening and they were screaming. And even though their threats and screams really had nothing to them because they're a bunch of freaking cowards, and I'll call them that to their damn faces, what they really were trying to do was derail the argument. And weak school board members, weak people, or just plain unintelligent people, allowed the howler monkey exhibit to direct what they were going to do. And so Chisholm just happens to be the first school that we're going to toss under the bus. Well, Albert Lee really was. But Chisholm now is having all sorts of problems. And I want to make sure we understand this. The week before Labor Day, 400 kids. Last week, with just 4 days of school, because it was Labor Day week, 600 kids. We're already over 1,100 kids on the first 2 days this week. And who predicted this? We did. Not because we're smart, but because we understand the science. But yet, how many times do we have to see the people who preach personal responsibility? How many times do we have to see those clowns fail spectacularly to realize you shouldn't be listening to those idiots? How often? I have a friend who said it took her kid 3.5 days, 3.5 days to come home with the first coronavirus warning that someone in her class had come down and been diagnosed with coronavirus. First in 3.5 days. And that was at a school that actually had a face mask mandate. The reality is this is dangerous. Imagine if that school... When you're looking at Chisholm after 10 days shutting it down, it's not like that's the first case. Those first cases started appearing the day that freaking school opened up because they themselves allowed the howler monkeys to dictate how things are going to go. And the reality is this is a freaking mess. This is an absolute freaking mess. And it's not getting better. Put the mask mandates in, you fools. Can you imagine? We are probably going to lose 100 people in the state of Minnesota just because school districts refused to put mask mandates in. And maybe the kid doesn't die. Maybe the kid does. But grandma dies. Or dad dies. Or three of their teachers die. We're going to have 100 people plus, probably more, just die because of this. But God forbid we actually go on out there and care about other human beings. I'll tell you what, I'll take a break. I got more on the Minnesota coronavirus update because I got even more disturbing news and a disturbing story. I'm not sure exact. I'm going to be careful here because it might be, I'll be blunt, it might be made up. I don't think it is. It sounds very legit. And I think this is the problem that we are seeing in America right now. It's that the stupid people have been told their stupidity is a freaking virtue, and it's somehow a counterpoint to intelligent argument. And that is, it's not. You're just stupid, and stop being stupid because you're hurting other people. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Native Roots Radio, they're coming up next here. Robert Pilot, Wendy, Ogama, a whole crew there. Just absolutely top-notch. Native American news, you will not find it anywhere else, I think, in the country. It is exceptional. If you're not staying with us, you need to be. Stay with us all evening long right here on AM 950. Native Roots Radio, I Am Awake with Robert Pilot. That's coming up here in the 6 o'clock hour. 952-946-6205. Here is the post. Now, once again, I'll put the disclaimer out. I'm not sure. I can't vouch for the validity of this post. It sounds somewhat legitimate. The fact, though, I don't have a name or a location, and I tried to find it, and someone said it sounds like it was on Reddit. But I'm going to read this because I think that what I'll say is this, is whereas I can't vouch for the validity of this, do I think something like this has happened probably a few times in this country? Absolutely. Absolutely. I need some advice. My boss came into work sick with a fever. She told us it was bronchitis, and about 3 days later, I started feeling sick. I was 30 weeks pregnant, felt like cold at the first. When it got worse, I started to run a fever. I stayed home. I tested for COVID and came back positive right away. I called my boss to let her know what she said. I figured you would get it, and she said, I figured you would get it. I had, but I didn't want to tell anyone, have people freak out because it's just like the flu and we all need to get it. Wow. So she, in this story here, had a boss that knowingly went to work sick with COVID under the argument she was trying to get other people sick. She then proceeded to tell me to not tell anyone in the office complex. Well, the first thing I did is call and warn people. Her and I exposed. I was very sick for about a week. I kept calling my doctors for my pregnancy. They advised to just watch my O2 stats and count my daughter's kicks. I woke up on August 5th. She was having contractions. I didn't feel her move that morning. I took our oldest daughter the first day of kindergarten and took her to school. They drove straight to the hospital, rather, where they told me there was no heartbeat. She lost the child. Between COVID and losing my baby, I was out of work for 5 weeks, which I got paid for 0 days. I returned back to work, and my boss was so cold about the whole thing. I had to start a fundraiser to help us, and we were trying to save for funeral. I never got as sorry. She told me, you need to move on and get back to work. It's all part of life. You get a virus and people die. Wow. How is that a human being? How is that a human being? My whole family is shattered. My bills are behind. We had to pay to get her cremated and now trying to arrange for a funeral. My question is, can she get in trouble for coming to work with COVID and spreading it and lying? I think she can. I would hope she could. I mean, my guess is she's going to be like, you're lying. I never did that. I didn't realize I had COVID. You're just bitter and angry because you lost your kid. I'll tell you what. I'd love to see that boss get on a witness stand and have a lawyer just dismantle her. I don't, you know. Can I vouch that story specifically happened? No. Do I think that that's exactly something that's happened multiple times in this country? Absolutely, without a doubt in my freaking mind. Without a doubt in my mind. And it might not be as horrible and tragic to this woman who is losing the baby, but I mean, I know people who have gone into work and had a coworker or a boss sick, but they were all told everyone had to get in. So they went into work, and then they got sick, and they ended up in the hospital. They ended off work. You know, one of the reasons why people, by the way, don't want to take your crap job is that if you're at the point where in a pandemic where someone is sick and you say, get in here and work, well, I don't want to work for you because you have just exposed to me that you're just a massive jackass. And I'm not going to let – and while you being a jackass is not necessarily as contagious as coronavirus, I don't want to be around you like coronavirus. Idaho is falling into the seventh circle of hell. Well, is it really that far of a fall? I mean, they were teetering on the sixth anyway, weren't they? I mean, it's Idaho. You and your freaking potatoes. Idaho is kind of loon ball central lately. Idaho, but yeah, this is where they're at because of their leadership. Idaho public health leaders on Thursday expanded health care rationing statewide amid a massive increase in the number of coronavirus patients requiring hospitalizations. The Idaho Department of Health and Welfare made the announcement after St. Luke's Health System, Idaho's largest hospital network, on Wednesday asked state health leaders to allow crisis standards of care because the increase of COVID-19 patients had exhausted the state's medical resources. Idaho is one of the least vaccinated U.S. states, with only about 40% of its residents fully vaccinated against COVID. Only Wyoming and West Virginia have more dumber people. Lower vaccination rates. Crisis care standards mean the scarce resources, such as ICU beds, will be allotted to the patients most likely to survive. Wow. Look at where we are as a society. Other patients will be treated with less effective methods. And once again, this entire surge is stupidity driven. It is stupidity driven. That's all it is. Crisis care standards mean the scarce resources such as ICU beds will be allotted to patients most likely to survive. Other patients will be treated with less effective methods or in dire cases given pain relief or other palliative care. Thursday's move came a week after Idaho officials started allowing healthcare rationing at hospitals in the northern part of the state. The situation is dire. We don't have enough resources to adequately treat the patients in our hospitals. Whether you are there for COVID-19 or a heart attack or because of a car accident, Idaho Department of Welfare Director Dave Jepson said in a statement, he urged people to get vaccinated and wear masks indoors and in crowded outdoor settings. Probably followed immediately by four or five Idaho Republicans going, "That's all bunk! That's all bunk!" I don't want you dead, I don't want you sick, and I don't want you bankrupt. I don't want you dead, I don't want you sick, and I don't want you bankrupt. And you guys are out there insisting you can negotiate or bravado your way through a virus. And, you know, now it's to the point where, I mean, have you seen the latest thing for these people? They go on out there, they insist there's no coronavirus, there's no COVID, they don't need a vaccine, they get sick, they're in the hospital, and then the person dies. And all the people outside, as opposed to say, "Gee willikers, I guess this is a lesson. Maybe we should all get vaccinated so we can live." Nope. Now they're out there saying, "The hospital murdered them when they put him on a ventilator." You mean the ventilator that the patient was begging to be put on because they were dying? You don't trust the hospitals, then why are you going there when you feel sick? How? Why? Uh-oh, little hole in your theory, isn't it? Seriously, if you don't trust doctors and hospitals and science and medicine, then when you get sick, why are you going there? Shouldn't you just stay at home and put a raw steak on your wound? Oh, or you can put mustard on your chest. That will, there you go, a little mustard on the old chest. That will get rid of COVID. You know, you can, or get your horse dewormer. It's delicious. Make a frothy shake. Oh, God. Jesus. That one even got me in the back of the jaw. Yeah. No. Oh, man. You absolute idiots. What are you doing, man? Get vaccinated. Wear a damn mask. Don't sit there. Don't listen to the howler monkeys that are trying to scream out rationality, intelligence, and thought. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Changing subjects, if I may. There is something I didn't think we'd actually ever see possibly being called to return. But here we go. Let's hear it for Factory Towns. Yes, the scourge of 1880s America, where one corporation basically controlled an entire town, including the bank, the grocery store, the post office, everything in that town. And where if you got on the wrong side of your boss, they would take your house, they would take your money, they would take all your food, and they would set you on the street and tell you good luck because there's no place in this town that's going to hire you. The company town, where wages were kept low, benefits were kept low, squalor was kept high. Whoever thought 1880s corporate abuse of citizens would ever say, hey, you know what we need to bring back? That and the McRib. Yeah. Oh, McRib, though. Oh, the new flavor with the horse dewormer on it. Oh, it's just delicious. Ugh. Stop it, Matt. Stop it. Even I'm getting sick by this. Stop it. The campaign against economic inequality has put a bullseye on cities. Local governments are encouraged. This is from Bloomberg, by the way. Local governments are encouraged to make wages, change their zoning laws, and build more housing, particularly in affluent communities that are squeezing out the lower class. But what if you shifted that focus to a different kind of community? Considering these burgeoning new places strung along the interstate and other highways leading away from urban cores, populated by warehouses and fulfillment centers that are being built to serve the needs of e-commerce customers, let's call them factory towns. Yes, they're even calling it factory towns. Wow. Read a book. These are places where working class jobs are being created in large numbers and where wages already are rising. They're not much in the spotlight yet, but making these modern-day company towns more livable for the working class might be a better approach to solving inequality, with a higher likelihood of success than continuing the fight against entrenched interests in coastal cities and high-cost parts of metro areas. So basically what their argument is this, that if, say, an e-commerce outlet, and eBay, Amazon, whatever, they build a factory out on one of the highways that it's just out in the middle of nowhere, you know, just out there, that what we should do is actually build a factory town there and invest in getting that place set up, as opposed to, I don't know, where the people are right now, taking care of making sure there's affordable housing, clean food and good jobs there. It's just, you know, basically when someone says, hey, I can't afford to live in this town anymore, you tell them it sucks to be you. You need to go on out to Monticello or Big Lake or Sartell or Chisholm. That's where you need to go. It used to be that when you were driving out of a metro area on a highway, you'd note the change in scenery as it went from urban to rural. Today, what's most noteworthy is the transition to humongous warehouses and distribution centers. Yes. Are that where we're going to store the humans? Don't give me any ideas, Matt. Both currently in use and many more being built, retail and e-commerce Goliaths, Amazon.com, and Walmart and distribution facilities everywhere. And while they may have the biggest footprint, companies that make building materials have their fair share, as do e-commerce players like pet supply companies, Chewy. Economic realities dictate that these facilities get built. We need to speedy deliveries. Makes it important to be close to a large concentration of customers. But because the facilities require so much land, hundreds of thousands of square feet or more, they tend to be out in the outskirts of cities where land is abundant and cheap. Highway proximity is a must so that trucks can get quickly in and out. These warehouses also provide jobs to a large number of people. Oh, and such great jobs. Hey, you're going to pee there at your station, or are you going to, you know, pee as you run over to get product? Just going to wonder. Don't have to go to the bathroom. Sorry. I'm a little jaded today, aren't I? I'm a little, Matt's Matt's jaded. These jobs also provide a large number of people, jobs to people there. 800,000 square foot Amazon building employs between 1,000 and 1,500 full-time workers. So when you have multiple large warehouses operated by different companies packing along both sides of the highway in close proximity, you can be talking about a cluster employing many thousands of workers. Now consider Amazon's announcement this week. They're making another big hiring push for the fulfillment centers, with jobs paying a starting wage of $18 an hour. Hope you have a big bladder. Up 20% since 2018. basically desperately trying to get anyone to work for them. Thinking about the growth of fulfillment and distribution centers in general, maybe these highway warehouse communities with jobs that pay increasingly respectable wages are what the future of the working class looks like. And doesn't it make sense then to think about how we can make these communities better for the people who live and work there? It starts with making the jobs as high-paying and as safe as possible. Outside, good luck with that, because, I mean, I got to tell you right now, the way you're putting power in the hands of these corporations, I don't know how much you're going to be able to control how much they pay. Whether that can be done by running labor markets hot or perhaps with unionization or the threat of it. Okay, so they're already acknowledging, hey, you might not be able to get the union here, but the threat of it. Oh, there you go. If these sorts of jobs get into the average wage of $20 an hour, then a household with 1.5 full-time workers would make 60,000 people. I love how they just did that there, don't you? I love how they did. Hey, it's not going to be like the 50s where a person can have one job and you can afford a house and a car, go on a vacation, send your kids to college. No, 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 no. You still have to work 1.5 jobs. But here's the good deal. You'll still make $60,000. Which, in this day and age, don't get me wrong, if you've got a family there, that's not bad, but it's not great either. Especially if you're talking about owning a house, doesn't mean that you can't. I mean, hey, if you got affordable housing, that's the case. But once again, the problem here is the factory town issue, because what you end up doing is you have a controlled population that's betrothed to the company and a community that's betrothed to the company. And what you end up getting is, well, a lot of people getting screwed over. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you what, I'll take a break. When I come on back, let me give you a reminder of how this sometimes can go up and blow up in your face, not from 120 years ago, but from recently out in the western part of this state. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. All right, do I have to remind everyone of Crystal Sugar? You remember that on Moorhead? Where they basically screwed over their own employees over there? And because they were basically the only gig in town, they were able to do that? And I remember there was a story I read out there of how the workers who were getting screwed over were going to church and sitting in the same church as the people who were screwing over the workers, and at no point did those people even look at the workers. I'm like, yeah, there you go. Nice religious lesson there. I'm glad you got the Bible that basically says, screw over everyone else. I'm in it for myself, because that's not Christianity. I remember that story. But yeah, okay. And one of the things which is a problem with the story from Bloomberg is there's a lot of if they give these people good living wages, if they allow them to unionize, if they build them affordable housing, if they do these things, it's the same exact thing that happened in the 1880s when they were trying to. And in Minnesota, it started with the lumber industry, and then it became the taconite industry, iron ore. And they would give you a flower, and you'd be sitting in some Cleveland or Chicago or something like that, and here comes a flyer that comes on. It's like, great wages, a house, quality of life. All you have to do is move to northern Minnesota, and you can be part of the whatever mines company town. And these people would come up there, and they get work, and they weren't getting treated very well. They're getting treated horribly. And the company let people know, oh, you're now in rural Minnesota. Oh, and this is in the days before good roads and, you know, good communication or anything like this. Those towns, those people, they basically controlled everything. And they screwed people over. And there have been many stories of individuals where their own money was just taken right from under their noses. And the argument was, prove that we took it. And they had nothing they could do to prove it. People burning workers out of their houses, beating workers that were out on strike. This is not something we want to return to. And once again, I'm not going to necessarily badmouth a business which requires their own employees to take bathroom breaks in their work zones. Whew, wow. I'm not necessarily going to rip on them. But hey, if you give any corporation this kind of unbridled power and authority over their workforce, What do you think is going to happen when the company reminds the police department, oh, by the way, you guys are betrothed to us. We pay for everything here. We pay for those new cars. We pay for we pay for your guns. You work for us. Not saying that a company would, but just there's that potential. Or the school board, where all of a sudden you are having your curriculum changed because the company town, hey, we built this school. We pay for all a good chunk of the teachers that are at the school. You know, they or either directly or through our wages, which get paid in this town. Yeah, you'd better start teaching what we want you to teach. And mask mandates, oh, unless we have a special on the mask mandates, no, that's not going to fly. You get on out there, and even when you get out there and work, you start saying to yourself, well, hey, you know, $18 an hour, that's not cutting it. Well, it's going to cut it for you. I mean, there's this, oh, well, eventually they might give them a better wage. Eventually they might give them a better house. Eventually they might have shuttle buses. Where they plus the possibility of employer-provided shuttle buses. Now, possibility. A unicorn come flying on my caboose, too. I'm not going to necessarily bank on that as far as a solid business proposal. Okay. We have learned our lesson here, folks. This is astounding that someone is at factory towns again. We had learned our lesson, and now, hey, all you have to do is just sign over every bit of control in your life to the company. What could possibly go wrong? In case you're missing my if I'm burying the lead, I don't think this is a good idea. These new factory towns will presumably have new issues that need addressing, such as adequate amounts of housing, schools, healthcare facilities. But the point is, we need to be thinking about what ways communities can be created by the growth of U.S. e-commerce infrastructure. Bow to the great corporations. The corporations are who you only need to bow down to. Well, screw you, Bloomberg. No, I'm not going to go along with this. Because we've already done this, and it does not work. It generally doesn't work out, at least for the needy. And maybe, just maybe, as opposed to trying to go on out and create some never-to-be-realized utopia out in some rural district that just happens to have Interstate 90 or 94 or 35 running next to it. Maybe, just maybe, you take that money where the people are right now and try to increase their quality of life, put more jobs there, give them a livable wage, quality grocery stores, real opportunity, and then maybe we don't have to start shipping people out to the middle of nowhere and hope the great corporate gods are betrothed that day. Dear Lord. Have a good one. Native Roots Radio is up next. Till tomorrow. See ya.